106 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings on a Friday. 343-0106, 343-0106. You can hop on with us. Go to the text line as well. Lots to talk about this morning, and we'll get to the, I see some comments on the text line about the NRA story, and get into that as well. Also talk about Will Dismukes and the latest there for the representative from the Prattville area. Now it's a charge of embezzlement, and we'll get into that story. And but first, though, I want to do this. So I had a chance yesterday to talk to Dr. Brendy Murphy from the Mobile County Health Department about just the questions we all talk about here on the show on coronavirus, the numbers. Dalton, you started off the week discussing why we had that big surge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, we follow the numbers. We try to follow the numbers every weekday morning, mm-hmm. but I try to look at them every single day. And I noticed over the weekend, you know, last Saturday and Sunday, that Mobile County had just outrageous numbers of new cases added to the state's numbers. And it was clearly an outlier from what we had been seeing, even though cases had been rising in Mobile over the last few weeks, but it was an outrageous number of new cases. Mm-hmm. And Monday morning we came in and I said, you know, I think this must have been backlogged data that they added. And then on that Monday afternoon press conference from the Mobile County Health Department, where Dr. Murphy gets up and talks with the press, she basically said the same thing. She said that due to an error in their system where they account for all these numbers, that they had to add these cases on, and they were actually from early July. So that kind of messed with the numbers a little bit this week. And I know we'll get into some of the audio later that you had with her. But remember, it was back in March when this thing started that Dr. Murphy came into the studio and talked with us about the pandemic. And it seems like it was 8 or 9 years ago, but it was just a few months ago that she talked with us, and it was great to have her in again yesterday.
Yeah, it was. And we addressed that, first of all, that question of the numbers coming in. So we're going to play some clips from the interview, and you can get that. It's 40 minutes of a conversation that we had yesterday. So you can go get the whole podcast by going to our website and going and clicking the podcast tab, or iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, a bunch of places to get our podcast. But let's play some cuts from this. So this was Dr. Brendy Murphy on yesterday talking about exactly what Dalton just said up there, the numbers last week. What happened with the bunch of numbers that came in on Sunday or Monday, and then and then they were coming in, they were, I guess, cases from early July, right? Explain that to us. What happened?
That's right. So last week, differently. You know, there are changes to our surveillance system. That covers a lot of work to use that word, surveillance system. There's a lot of people working under that umbrella. But there have been changes, adaptive changes, you know, since the very beginning, trying to adapt to keep up with such a high volume of reports. I mean, the system was not designed for this. So we do have to make changes as time goes along. What happened last week was, usually when the lab reports come in to the electronically come into the state health department, they are processed automatically, and that lab investigation gets counted automatically. If it meets, there's a script that's run against the lab results, the message, and if it has these six characteristics that it's supposed to have, then it's automatically processed and it's counted the day it comes to us. That's what happens in a perfect world. What happened is there were lab results that started coming in going back to the second week of July or so, that the electronic message, for whatever reasons, and it's multiple different reasons, the script was not identifying them as a positive COVID. And they were getting queued in this other bucket in the surveillance system. And no one realized that was happening for, you know, a week or two. And when we realized that was happening, the only solution was to manually process those records. So we got all hands on deck, Montgomery and Mobile, to manually go into the system and manually touch those records to say, you know, if the script didn't identify this as a true COVID positive, but it is, and we're going to mark it as positive, and that's why all of those records got counted on Friday and Saturday.
All right, so there's the reason for what you saw in that glut on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's important to keep that in mind. And, you know, the rest of the state's looking at this and saying, look at Mobile County's numbers. They had the highest number of cases all week. But, again, there's a lot that go into these statistics.
All right, Tom, the next cut here, that question we've had about deaths by county. If somebody comes in from Washington County, gets tested positive for coronavirus in Mobile County, who gets what county has that number in there? I asked that question. Let's say somebody comes in from Washington County or Clark County or something, comes to get a test in Mobile, and they test positive for COVID-19. Does that become a Mobile County case, or is it a Washington County or Clark County case? How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, for all of the diseases that we investigate for the last 25, 30 years, I guess, anytime a resident of another jurisdiction, whether it's another county in Alabama or maybe it's another state or potentially another country, when we identify that that is not a Mobile County resident, then we transfer that investigation to the jurisdiction for the home of record. So we would electronically, now we do it, used to be we would fax or call, but now we electronically transfer that case to the appropriate jurisdiction for investigation.
So that now, that person doesn't show up when we read the numbers of the number of new cases in Mobile or something like that, those numbers aren't in that total number?
There is one slight, that's correct, but what has happened recently because of the extremely high number of cases reported to us, we have been looking at COVID hospitalizations in a different data source. So the public health surveillance data source for counting just the number of cases and the number of people who have died with COVID, that definitely is only Mobile County residents. But we have switched to using data that hospitals report on COVID hospitalizations. And that data system includes any person who is hospitalized in a Mobile County hospital with COVID. So that definitely includes people from other Alabama counties, you know, certainly a lot of people from Mississippi who seek care. And then, of course, we have, you know, tourists and business travel and that sort of thing that sometimes end up in Mobile hospitals. So when you look at our daily report, I think today it said, let me just take a look at it. It says that, you know, cumulatively there have been 1,426 people who were in a Mobile hospital with COVID positive. That includes Mobile County residents and non-residents that had treatment and were positive in Mobile County hospitals.
So they show up in that cell for hospitalization, but they wouldn't show up in test positive or if there was a death.
So if the count and the dies, that count is just for Mobile residents.
All right. So that's been a question that we've heard a lot, right? You know, would the numbers in the bigger metro counties be higher because people travel in to get a test there? Because more access to it, but it sounds like that is not what's going on. All right, coming back, more from that interview yesterday with Dr. Brendy Murphy from the Mobile County Health Department. Get your calls and texts, too, at 343-0106. It's 815. This is FM Talk 106.5. Thank you, Kane. 820 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig, glad to have you all along. We'll be checking in with Dr. Bill for more on our forecast coming up around 8:35. Also at 9, this morning, we're at 9:06.
Mm-hmm.
We got the news. And then Jeff Porcio, day 5.
Yeah, we're the appetizer.
That's right.
He's the main entree. And then Sean, the dessert at noon.
That's right. Like a like the creme brulee of the radio world.
That's what I've always said.
Who doesn't? All right. We continue with yesterday's interview with Dr. Randy Murphy from the Mobile County Health Department. Trying to go through, and I want you to listen to the whole podcast if you didn't catch it yesterday, because there's a lot more to it. But we've taken out three clips here that are probably the questions we talk about most, or you see on Facebook. People say, well, this, that, or the other. And we're just trying to get some facts here to go with it. This one, I think, is going to be the one that leaves you leaning, as my buddy says. Now, you've heard people, and we've talked about it on the show, talked about it on the text line, on our social media pages, that if you have COVID-19 and you die from some other comorbidity, it gets registered as a COVID-19 death. That seems, to hear it, you're like, there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way. I mean, unless the COVID killed it. Now, there's a gray area to this where you could say, if you're fighting through COVID and you have an aneurysm or a heart attack or something like that kills you, then, you know, I don't know that I have a problem with saying that that's COVID related, because you if you weren't fighting through the illness, you probably wouldn't have had that happen right then.
Right.
But there have been stories of people that have died in something's happened to them outside a hospital or a sick bed, and they have COVID-19, and they're getting written down as a COVID-19 death.
Yeah, there was one story in particular, and I can't remember which state this was from, but a guy tested positive and then ended up dying in a motorcycle crash. He was on the motorcycle, and I remember they counted that as a COVID-19 death, and that's one question that a lot of people have been wondering
about. When I first heard that, too, I was like, there's no way that's possible. That's beyond the pale. What is that? I can't do that. So I asked the question yesterday of Dr. Randy Murphy. Here's your answer. Somebody's positive for coronavirus, but they're in a car wreck, to make an extreme case. They come into the hospital, they die. It was really from being run over, and it gets filed as a COVID case. Does it?
Sometimes it does. It depends on what is on the death certificate and what the attending physician codes it as. So these decisions are made by, you know, attending physicians who know the circumstances of that death. So yes, sometimes even something like a car accident or a heart attack might be classified as COVID positive, because right now we're trying to gather as much information as we can about what causes death in people who are COVID positive. Because again, our assumption is that it's an acute respiratory distress syndrome. But if we only code COVID death based on that narrow definition, then we can't learn about death maybe from cardiac disease that were related to the COVID infection, but the science had not recognized that link yet.
I see a lot of gray there, right? So this gray area where it could be cardiac, or it could be aneurysm or something like that. I see that. But at the same time, you know, we talked about an extreme example. To make an example, if it's, you know, if I get run over by the bus, I mean, the bus killed me, right? I mean, on the death certificate, the severe trauma impact from the bus is what killed me.
Right. Yeah, I get that one, but I hear you there. There definitely, it does seem like there are some places that you can draw that line. But I think in the reality, it's really hard to do that and to do it consistently across all states. So that then, you know, looking at deaths at the national level, what's a death in Alabama can be compared to a death in California. So yeah, I mean, we don't have a perfect system. I will be the first to admit that. We don't, but we are trying to do the things that we think we need to do to learn information with which to mitigate transmission and also understand the fuller picture of the pathology of the disease.
All right. So a couple clips. There's 40 minutes of that conversation, and we also get into discussion of mask and, you've seen, there's a couple of videos out there. I think there are more than a couple of videos out there that show that the mask won't stop something a certain size, and the coronavirus is smaller than that. And she comes back around to the discussion of, and we've had this before, that it's about the droplets. So the mask, in its theory, wherever you are on mask, but let's talk about the theory on mask, is that the coronavirus is hitchhiking on the droplets that are coming out when you cough, you holler,
sneeze, any of that stuff.
Right. So when you do that, those the virus is hitching a ride on those droplets. And so the mask doesn't have to be tight enough of a weave to catch something as small as a virus, because we probably couldn't even breathe through something like that.
Right.
But it's there to stop the droplets that are the conveyor of the virus there. So we address that as well. But there's a whole bunch more in the interview. You can check it out by going to fmtalk1065.com. Just click on the podcast tab. You can download it there or iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, any of those places.
Yeah, and I want to thank Dr. Murphy for coming on yesterday.
Yeah,
because
I do too.
You know, she didn't have to. And she didn't have to answer every question you brought up, but she did. So, and she said it right there that it's not a perfect system, and they're still working on learning so many different things about this virus, you know. And she came on, she answered it truthfully, which I think is about all you can ask out of the
That's all I ask out of anybody.
Right.
You know, you do that, and you cannot like answers, but if somebody's coming from a truthful place, then at least you have that information. But there's probably more than two parts of this discussion, but I would say, you know, ham-fistedly, you could say there's the discussion of the virus, how it moves from person to person, what about, and we also get into asymptomatic cases and all that in the interview. You can get into that part of it. Then you have the other part that's almost a government discussion, right? It's forms, it's clerical, it's mm-hmm. how they fill out these death certificates, or like the questions I had about, you look at when Dalton's doing the coronavirus cases, and you say Mobile has this many cases. Were those all people from Mobile, which we found out that, yes, they are.
Right.
The only time they use people that aren't from Mobile County is in hospital bed numbers.
Right.
So you said in their record keeping, if you're from Mobile and go get a test then and it's positive, okay, for example, then that shows up as a positive test for Mobile. Somebody comes from Washington, Clark County, Baldwin County for some reason, comes into Mobile County and gets that test, they get a positive test. It is registered at their county of residence as mm-hmm. a positive test for that county, even though the test took place in Mobile County.
Yeah, and, you know, I will say, as we look at these numbers every day, I have been encouraged lately, nationally and here at home, that it seems that the total number of new cases has been declining. Ever since we hit this second peak over the course of July, it seems like we're declining in the number of cases. Now, of course, because the fatalities normally come 2 to 3 weeks later, right now we're kind of in the midst of seeing those numbers either level off or continue to increase a little bit. But I would expect the fatality numbers to start dropping here before long. But then, you know, they've since the beginning been talking about a second major wave, and I don't know if you want to call it the third wave or the second wave.
But Fauci said before we're still in the first wave a couple weeks ago. I mean,
that's exactly what he said. And I guess he considers it the first wave still because everyone locked down, and we did have a big number of cases and deaths a couple months ago, but then everyone kind of started to relax, which I still think was not necessarily relaxing with how you act in public, but being able to open the businesses, I think, was just crucial. They had to do that. But we all knew that that would come, right? Once everyone got outside their house, which was necessary in order to keep the economy rolling, we knew that there would be more cases, and then because of that, more deaths. But will there be another large uptick in cases at the end of the year? I still don't know, and I don't know if anyone can truthfully tell you whether they know or not.
And the other part of this, too, is there are people out there saying, well, because you hear the story that the kids are can't get it as easily, they can't transmit it to adults as easily, and then all of a sudden, here we go, with yesterday research coming out and saying the kids mm-hmm. can get it easily, and we had that story of the summer camp. Listen, I'm with you. I mean, you give it a week, and whatever you were told is the science last week gets changed. So we all get confused. We're all looking for answers. Like, we'd like to know what we're facing here. But we don't have all the answers yet.
Right. I mean,
this is it's brand new. And which, by the way, too, on the school thing, get y'all's votes in on the front page of our website, fmtalk1065.com, and the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Are you worried about sending your children back to school? It's 50-50 right now. Poll. So you vote right there. Front page of fmtalk1065.com. All right. More of Mobile Mornings on the way. And we'll check in with Dr. Bill coming up, and news straight ahead from Westwood One.
Hey, thank you, Kane. 836 FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, doing great here at FM Talk 106.5, and big weekend on deck. The weather's looking nice. So what can I expect when I come out to McConnell?
Oh, man, we got the car sitting out front. We got some GM certifieds. You can check those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Got plenty of those. Traded in a nice little jacked up truck yesterday. We're gonna have it out front by the weekend. Don't forget, we got employee pricing on all the SUVs with GM. Also got, every day we're getting another truckload of trucks. So we're building this inventory back up. We got plenty of trucks, some AT4s, 3/4 tons. I'm sitting here looking at one of the new Yukons. They are just fine. Y'all come by and see us on Midtown, beautiful Dolphin Street, east of I-65.
Yeah, and you might have a lot of inventory now, but I know you're always willing to make more room. If somebody wants to sell their vehicle, how can they do that?
That's right. Give Gene or I a call at 251-476-4141. Give us a bend in the miles, and we'll give you a price right over the telephone.
All right. Thank you, Louis.
Thank you.
That is Louis Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, 8:37, and a couple other stories looking at this morning. First of all, yesterday, New York Attorney General seeks to dissolve the National Rifle Association, brought a lawsuit. New York Attorney General filed that lawsuit against the NRA yesterday, seeking to dissolve the powerful gun lobby for a multitude of alleged violations of state law governing charities. Attorney General Letitia James accused the NRA of an array of, quote, illegal conduct, end quote, according to a press release describing the suit, including, quote, the diversion of millions of dollars away from the charitable mission of the organization for personal use by senior leadership, awarding contracts to for financial gain for close associates and family, and appearing to dole out lucrative no-show contracts for former employees in order to buy silence and continued loyalty. Goes on to say these individuals in the NRA are charged with failing to manage the NRA funds and failing to follow numerous state and federal laws, which contributed to the loss of more than $64 million in just 3 years, end quote, said James. She added the NRA's influence has been so powerful that the organization went unchecked for decades while top executive funneled millions into their own pockets, end quote. All right. So let's talk about what's happening here.
Yeah.
So first of all, this does maybe explain some of the Oliver North back and forth with Wayne LaPierre and some... I had followed that there were some internal wranglings going on in the NRA, some power plays, and I didn't know exactly what it was about. I think it's probably some of this, but let's talk about where this comes from. If the Attorney General were just doing the job, you would pursue the people that broke the law, right? If she says Wayne LaPierre broke the law and was embezzling, but then you go after him.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, she's saying she's seeking to dissolve the NRA. Now, this has got a couple elements in it. If these things are true about members of the NRA, if they were doing illegal things like that, then go after them. If they're criminals, go after them. But this is against the whole NRA. Even they're going after the there's another wing that does of the NRA that does programs like Eddie the Eagle, that is the gun safety character in all the gun safety programs and other safety programs for kids around guns, a lot of the charitable things that they do, putting on different educational events out there, they're going after that as well. And I think a similar lawsuit was filed in the District of Columbia as well against NRA. So this is NRA is backing Trump. Is this, and if it is, listen, if the NRA wants to back Trump, okay, that's political dollars.
Right.
If we're using, if in the hearts of the Attorney General of New York State, if they're using the Attorney General's office to counter the fact that the NRA is, that, then you have government using paid for, mm-hmm. Employees by the citizens to go after a charitable group. Once again, if they rolled this out yesterday and said Wayne LaPierre is embezzling and Wayne LaPierre was a thief and stuff like that, if they're criminal, go after them. Get them. But this is not. It's more about the whole organization.
And it's turned into what we have now is an old-fashioned lawsuit off, because after the AG announced this yesterday for New York, then the NRA has filed its own civil suit against the AG there. They said that Letitia James, the Attorney General there in New York, quote, made the political prosecution of the NRA a central campaign theme when she was running for office back in 2018.
And people voted for that.
Yeah, and they did vote for that. And they said she's not treated the association fairly since. But let's talk about politics, because this is all political.
Yes, it is.
And we are heading into a general election at the end of this year in November. Well, there's been a lot more talk about the Second Amendment in this last year than mm-hmm. there have been in the prior 3 years of the Trump presidency. First off, remember with the riot the protest there in St. Louis where the two homeowners came out and, and poorly defended their property. I mean, they defended their property, but we were all talking
tactically,
about
tactically, it was not the best.
Tactically not the best, but still, Second Amendment, right? And so everyone began talking about it then. Well, now, yesterday, the thing that was trending online was Second Amendment rights. And this could, I think, you know, energize the Trump base even more to get out. If they're going to ask Joe Biden about this, there's no doubt about that. Now, whether he answers is a different story, but I have a feeling that if and when he does answer, it'll be on the side of the New York Attorney General who's wanting this prosecution. This could really, you know, be another thing that energizes the Trump base.
Okay, so I agree with you on that. There's a self-fulfilling prophecy here. If it comes out that Wayne LaPierre and others were, it was beyond that. It was systemic. It was loss of institutional control. Then the NRA will suffer some because people who donate money through our memberships every year might not or might not give as much because they will say, look at all that money you spent for lavish this, lavish that, instead of fighting for my Second Amendment rights. So there, that part of it is real and true. So there's going to be a reckoning on that. But at the same time, we have a straight up political part of this, like you pointed out. And to, if people voted for the district attorney, if they voted, I mean, sorry, for the attorney general in New York because she said she was going to go after the NRA politically on that, understand, y'all, even when it's not your time, this pendulum swings again. And will elsewhere somebody say that elect me because I'm going to go against somebody that defends your First Amendment rights? I mean, what kind of campaign is that? Let's go to the phones. Buddy is in Robertsdale up next. Hey, Buddy.
I think we got to punch him in over there on the phone line.
There we go.
There's Buddy.
Press my button. Hey, Buddy.
Hey, man. Hey, listen. I've met Wayne LaPierre over the years probably 20 times. I'm not saying we're friends or nothing. I got a hard time believing this. But here's my question. And then two things I want to tell you guys. One, these corona numbers are so jacked up it's not even funny for political gains. Okay? And two, they're diagnosing people with common colds. I know this for a fact because my wife works in a hospital.
And she told you that they were taking people that had the cold and calling it coronavirus?
There was a lot of stuff for coronavirus because they get so much money from the government for every person they diagnose.
Right. Well, we asked Randy Murphy about that question yesterday. She said it might be they get paid on all or reimbursed on all these things, that maybe a 20% increase for the coronavirus cases. And she asked me the question when I asked her that, Buddy. She said, "Do you think that these doctors and these hospitals can commit fraud for 20%?" You know, more on that money. I mean, that's a question we all have to answer ourselves.
Well, and I've got another guy I go to church with. His wife works at Nikki, one of the hospitals in Mobile. She's not around anybody with corona, but when they do the medical billing, the code they put her in on is under corona. Another thing, guys, they can't dissolve the NRA nationwide because of one lawsuit in New York State. They may be able to make them shut down offices in New York State, but they can still have them in New Jersey, North Carolina, Alabama, or wherever.
I saw that, and then I saw and I haven't been able to dig into it enough, Buddy. They said for some reason, and I don't understand the whole process yet, that if they can shut down that office, they can show something systemic. I don't know that it's true, but that's their argument, that it can go outside of New York State.
That's like saying a judge here in Alabama's got jurisdiction, isn't it?
Buddy, I ain't telling you it's right. I'm just telling you what they're saying. You know?
Guys, this has been the worst year, I think, in any of our lifetimes. And our grandkids are going to write papers on this year. They're going to write high school papers. That disaster it is. Guys, if Trump don't get reelected in November, it's going to be really bad. Y'all have a good day, guys.
All right. Appreciate it, Buddy. And we'll take some more calls at 343-0106. 343-0106. There we go. Cue the music. There we go. Excellent. Excellent. Making our way through.
It is a Friday.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Felt like a Monday. And maybe we get back a little time for the discussion of Will Dismukes. So he was yesterday called up on charges of embezzlement in Montgomery. We'll be right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Remember, check us out online, fmtalk1065.com. Which, by the way, online opinion poll question, which is up on our Facebook as well. Would you send your, you're worried about sending your kids back to school? Okay, because you had Sarah. I think Sarah Lynn went back yesterday. I know a lot of schools here over the next week or so will be going back in. Then Mobile County Public Schools, what do we say? It's virtual starting in September.
September.
Is it 9th?
First.
Is it
first? Okay. I guess Wednesday or whatever there. Yeah, I think it's September 1st. They start virtual learning for Mobile County Public Schools. And according to the superintendent, Kressel Threadgill, they're going to go for 9 weeks virtual learning. That would put students back in the classrooms around the beginning of November. And that's if things trend in the right direction. You know, at that point, I don't know if it's, and maybe someone else has another opinion, but if you're just coming back into the classrooms in November, why not go ahead and finish out the year virtually if that's how you're going to do it? But Baldwin County Schools, public schools, begin August 12th, I believe, and a lot of the private schools and religious schools here in Mobile County will also start around that time. But yeah, Sarah Land City Schools were the first, one of the first districts in the entire state to get back in the classroom this week.
All right, I also want to talk about the Will Dismukes saga going on here, which, by the way, it's let me get the latest here on the poll. 57% of y'all saying yes, you are worried about sending your children back. 43% no. You can vote online, front page of fmtalk1065.com. You'll see the 1-800-GOD-JUNK logo right beneath there. That's where you do your clicking and voting. You can also do that on our Facebook page. Leanna has a graphic up there that goes with it, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. All right, so I'm going to read this just in the words of my buddy Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News. Yesterday was really quite something. It's his first sentence here. He said around noon, and this is very similar, kind of what, you know, in New York, the attorney general had everybody waiting around with cameras because there's going to be a big announcement. I think most people thought it was going to be Trump tax return thing, and it wasn't. It was this NRA thing. Well, Todd writes, around noon, Montgomery District Attorney Daryl Bailey called a press conference to announce the arrest of a local public official. He didn't say which one, so rumors ran wild. And he said, admit it, you had your ideas of who it might be. So he set that up. He said, oh, we're going to do this thing. And then, of course, that gets everybody's attention. At 2 o'clock, Bailey ended the intrigue by saying he had been investigating State Representative Will Dismukes out of Prattville since May and was charging him with felony theft. The state alleges the theft in the excess of $2,500 took place at Weiss Commercial Flooring, where Dismukes worked before starting his own flooring company. And I think the number I've heard float around is $40,000 or thereabout for what the accusation is. Dismukes turned himself into the Montgomery County Jail yesterday evening, did not respond to questions from reporters. His attorney, Trey Norman, said the 30-year-old Prattville lawmaker maintains his innocence and questioned the timing of the arrest warrant given by Dismukes' recent political troubles. Okay, this is where we're going to get into the intrigue here. Dismukes, of course, has been the center of the controversy for nearly 2 weeks. Freshman lawmaker has endured calls for his resignation since he participated last month in an event honoring Nathan Benford Forrest, Confederate general and noted leader of the Ku Klux Klan. Last week, Alabama Daily News reported that the Alabama Ethics Commission did not have a required annual statement of economic interest from Dismukes 3 months after it was due. He later filed it. All right, so the timeline here. Wiser minds than I, meaning Jeff Poor, whose show starts here in about 7-8 minutes, said to me, he said, let's look at the timeline, because he knew it even before. So Dismukes is claiming that, hey, this is happening because I was taking a stand for, you know, being a son of Confederate veteran, this and that. He's claiming that they're coming after him because of that. But I just want to point out in the calendar that it was months before. If you look back at what was said in this presser, it was months before the event from a few weeks ago at Fort Dixie.
Yeah.
It was months before the event at Fort Dixie that this investigation began. So maybe he can explain something that I don't understand, but if the investigation into embezzlement had been going on for some period of time before the controversy started with his attendance at this Nathan Bedford Forrest birthday party at Fort Dixie. Once again, you see what I'm saying, y'all? Like the DA is saying that we were doing this investigation. And you know what? I would say an embezzlement investigation couldn't be done in 2 weeks' time.
Probably not. No.
So that's illogical. Plus, the district attorney says this investigation's been going on for months. So the investigation into embezzlement was going on before this event. So I just want to point that out, because I think there's probably going to be a lot of, hey, they're just coming after me because of my political beliefs or leanings or standings here. But let's talk facts. And if this investigation had been going on for months, that doesn't line up.
Yeah, and certainly the political hit is the direction that Dismukes and his lawyer have already taken that route. His lawyer yesterday was kind of questioning. He said, if this happened 4 years ago, these charges that came about, I guess, 4 years ago, he says, then why is it just now coming up? But, you know, there were a lot of outspoken Republican leaders after that Fort Dixie Nathan Forrest birthday party or whatever it was. Remember, because Chairman Terry Lathan came out and said something. I think Will Ainsworth, the governor, lots of people spoke out about it then. And then yesterday after this arrest, both the governor and the Republican Party chairwoman, Terry Lathan, came out with statements. Governor Ivey said, if true, it is disappointing when a public official elected with the confidence of the people abuses that trust. I support the letter of the law and no one is above it, especially those in public office. And then kind of saying the same thing, Terry Lathan, we expect our elected officials, regardless of party, to follow the laws of our state and nation. No one is immune to these standards, and it's very disappointing to hear of these allegations. This is now a legal matter, and it must run its course.
All right, so Terry Lathan has been consistent. Governor Ivey had nothing to say before, but also has been...
Okay, so she did not... After that first thing.
She's not been commenting on it.
Okay, gotcha.
She's been very quiet from the Blunt Mansion. Then all of a sudden...
With these charges.
Got a comment.
Yeah.
So, hey, I have a feeling we'll get some more insight into this with the Jeff Poor Show that starts here in just a couple minutes. It goes till noon and then Midday Mobile today at noon. Got lots to do on the show. And by the way, reminder, too, we'll talk about this on the Midday Show on a serious front here. Today is Purple Heart Day. August 7th, Purple Heart Day, commemorating the creation of the oldest American military decoration for military merit. The Purple Heart honors the men and women who are of the military order of the Purple Heart. During the American Revolutionary War, the badge for military merit decorated six known soldiers. And moving on from there, it's the Purple Heart. And today is Purple Heart Day. So just a reminder there. And think about that. Just stop for a minute or two and think about that today. All right, 8:58. Jeff Poor Show on the way next.